Imagine this scenario. You are on the oncology service and are following up with a 62-year-old woman with breast cancer, metastatic to the lung and bones, who is receiving hospice care. Her main concern is her pain control, which has been adequate until now. She says to you, "I am feeling more intense bone pain. The medication doesn't seem to be holding me as well as it did before. I take it as prescribed, no more and no less, but I think I need more." The change in your patient's pain control makes you wonder, why do pain thresholds change over time? And what are your next steps in evaluating her pain? What is the mechanism of her pain? And how will you manage her treatment? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholtz, bringing neurology from our bricks to your ears. After listening to today's episode, you'll be able to 1. Define the different classifications of pain, their mechanisms, and why pain occurs. 2. Describe the mechanisms of neuropathic pain. 3. Define and describe transient and chronic paresthesia. And 4. Define and describe allodynia and hyperalgesia. Reflect on the human condition. What unites us? Well, no matter who we are or where we come from, the one thing that unites us all is an ability to feel and endure pain. However, the experience of pain is individual, and there are many ways of feeling and describing it. Pain is often defined as physical or emotional suffering caused by injury, illness, or another unpleasant event. In today's episode, I want us to discuss how we understand pain, how we experience it, and think about if pain can be a good thing. Part 1. What are the different types of pain and their mechanisms? Pain is a sensation that warns of potential injury and alerts a person to avoid or treat it. For example, if you touch a hot object, you will feel pain and immediately remove your hand from that object, protecting your hand from further burns. As much as pain can burden and torment, ultimately it is an essential part of our body's mechanisms of self-preservation. Pain can be mild or severe, constant or intermittent, dull or sharp. Sometimes it can even be hard to describe the uncomfortable sensation in words. Nevertheless, clinicians always ask their patients to describe their pain. But why? Because its characteristics can help us better determine the mechanism behind a patient's pain. In the clinic, the patient's subjective experience of pain can be crucial to arriving at the correct diagnosis and treatment. For this reason, understanding the different kinds of pain and their underlying biology is an essential building block of foundational clinical knowledge. While there is no standard system of classifying pain, let's classify the 5 main types of pain, which are nociceptive, breakthrough, inflammatory, neuropathic, and functional. But before we dive into each type, let's see if you remember what you've just learned. Why do physicians ask patients to describe their pain? Because pain characteristics allow us to better determine the mechanism behind a specific type of pain. Okay, now let's get back on that bandwagon and keep going. First, let's explore nociceptive pain. Nociceptive pain is caused by stimulation of peripheral pain receptors, called nociceptors, by specific potentially harmful stimuli, including heat, pressure, or something causing tissue damage. The nerves that carry nociceptors relay this signal to the brain, where it is interpreted as pain. Nociceptive pain is caused by a physical, noxious stimulus detected by nociceptive receptors, which are found in most of the body's tissues. Now, nociceptive pain can be further broken down into somatic and visceral. Somatic pain includes musculoskeletal pain, such as pain resulting from a fall. It is primarily localized to the site of injury. Patients with somatic pain usually describe it as dull or sharp, or as a throbbing ache. Remember the last time you stubbed your toe on a piece of furniture? Yep, you are experiencing somatic pain. Visceral pain comes from internal organs and smooth muscle. Unlike somatic pain, visceral pain is usually referred, meaning pain is experienced outside the location of injury. It is often described as dull, aching, deep pressure, colicky, and poorly localized. The pain may come and go and can be associated with symptoms such as nausea or vomiting. Next up for us is breakthrough pain. Breakthrough pain is an acute flare of chronic nociceptive pain that breaks through a patient's normal regimen of pain medication. It is a common experience among patients with cancer and other diseases that require daily narcotic pain control. Breakthrough pain often necessitates additional medication to relieve the patient's suffering. Quick pop quiz on what we've learned so far. Which patients experience breakthrough pain? Patients who are suffering from chronic pain can experience breakthrough pain. Inflammatory pain is sometimes considered a subset of nociceptive pain, but it's not due to a direct injury like a cut or blow. Instead, it's caused by a variety of substances released at the site of tissue inflammation. When injury occurs, damaged tissues release inflammatory molecules like interleukins, such as IL-1 or IL-6, tumor necrosis factor alpha, also called TNF-alpha, prostaglandins, reactive oxygen species, vasoactive amines, and substance P. Although they help in injury recovery and fighting off infection, these substances also cause activation and increased excitability of the nociceptors, leading to pain. The overall result is erythema from vasodilation, swelling due to increased vascular permeability, and pain secondary to increased nociceptor excitability. Examples of inflammatory pain include appendicitis, rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, and herpes zoster. Now, one of the key pain types we will talk about today is neuropathic pain. This is pain caused by damage or disease within the somatosensory nervous system, which has both central and peripheral components. There is not a specific external stimulus, as in nociceptive pain. Instead, it arises from within the nervous system itself. Patients commonly describe it as a burning, freezing, or electric sensation, and it is often associated with other pathologic sensory changes. We'll discuss this type of pain in more detail in just a little bit. Finally, functional or psychogenic pain is pain without a demonstrable physical cause or clear pathology. It is sometimes caused by psychosocial factors such as stress, grief, or psychiatric disease. It commonly manifests as headache, abdominal pain, or back pain, and is often chronic because of persistence of the underlying stressor or psychiatric disorder. Although the pain is not caused by stimulation of peripheral pain receptors, it is real all the same. The most common functional pain syndromes include irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, fibromyalgia, and temporomandibular dysfunction. Most functional pain syndromes arise because of an interplay of environmental stressors and genetics, which leads to altered pain perception. Now, let's see if you are paying attention during our description of pain types. What are the five main types of pain? The five types include nociceptive, breakthrough, inflammatory, neuropathic, and functional pain. Part 2. Why do we experience neuropathic pain? Remember that I promised we'd return to discussing neuropathic pain? Here we go! All of us have, at some point, experienced nociceptive pain, like bumps and bruises encountered as we go about our day-to-day lives. But neuropathic pain is a less familiar sensation for most. As mentioned, patients commonly describe it as a burning, freezing, or electric sensation, most often in the extremities. Unlike nociceptive pain, it is caused from within the nervous system, usually without an external stimulus, although it can sometimes amplify normally benign external stimuli like light touch or heat. Patients complaining of neuropathic pain are commonly encountered in the clinic, and it is important to be able to differentiate their experience from other types of pain. What causes neuropathic pain? Usually, it results from injury or disease of the sensory portions of the peripheral nervous system or central nervous system, and can be classified according to the site of the lesion. We can divide this up into central and peripheral neuropathic pain types. Central neuropathic pain is a consequence of lesions affecting the central nervous system. Central neuropathic pain develops in the setting of many injuries, including stroke, infection, demyelination, trauma, and neoplastic disease. Now contrast that to peripheral neuropathic pain. Lesions of peripheral nerves, nerve roots, and dorsal root ganglia can impair and pathologically alter effective delivery of peripheral stimuli to the somatosensory cortex. This can be signals from pain receptors or other sensory signals like light touch or temperature. Peripheral neuropathic pain can be persistent or episodic and occurs with many different conditions, including diabetic nephropathy, nerve entrapment or injury, dry beriberi, and postherpetic neuralgia. Let's do a fast review. What are some causes of central neuropathic pain? The answers include stroke, demyelination, and neoplastic diseases. Now that we can define neuropathic pain, you may be wondering how we experience it. To understand the mechanism, we'll have to go down to the single neuron level and think in terms of neuronal pathways. Let's go through the mechanism step by step. Imagine that you are located on the surface of the skin. When there is a cut or burn, the sensation of pain is triggered and pain receptors on a peripheral neuron is activated. After detection, this neuron transmits the signal in the form of an action potential to the central nervous system via a synapse in the dorsal horn of the spinal cord. From the dorsal horn, a second-order neuron takes the signal to the brain, where it is processed and interpreted. So you have traveled from the surface of the skin right up into the brain during your journey along a pain sensation. In neuropathic pain, this circuitry goes haywire. So nerve damage can cause pathologic changes both at the site of injury in the peripheral nervous system as well as in the central nervous system that lead to neuropathic pain. One of the ways that the circuitry goes haywire is through a process called sensitization. In the periphery, damage to nerves that carry pain signals is incompletely repaired, leading to maladaptive functional changes. In the periphery, these neurons can become excessively sensitive to stimulation and can even start to generate and transmit pain signals entirely on their own. Over time, these changes in membrane excitability and synaptic activity render nociceptive neurons more sensitive to painful stimuli, especially heat and pressure. Because they are more sensitive, this becomes a process known as peripheral sensitization. These changes in the periphery have consequences for the central nervous system as well. Nociceptive neurons in the dorsal horn, bombarded by abnormal discharges from a damaged or dysfunctional peripheral nerve, will also eventually become pathologically excitable and sensitive to stimulation. This process is known as central sensitization and can lead to important clinical consequences, including allodynia, the interpretation of normally benign stimuli as painful, and hyperalgesia, or pain disproportionate to injury. We'll discuss these more in just a little bit. Now, there are a few other types of neuropathic pain that are important for us to learn together. These include other abnormal sensory syndromes that are not exactly painful, but are considered here because they result from neurologic injury, just like typical neuropathic pain. Let's first start with paresthesia. Have you ever fallen asleep in a funny position and woken up with a numb and tingly arm or leg? This pins and needle sensation is known as paresthesia. This is not classically considered pain, but like neuropathic pain, paresthesias are generated from within the nervous system, not from external stimuli, so they are included here. An interesting type of paresthesia is called formication, or the sensation that insects are crawling on the skin. It can be seen in many systemic and neurologic diseases, but perhaps it is most famous in patients experiencing alcohol withdrawal. Although paresthesias are usually transient, some patients live with this sensation every day. This chronic paresthesia usually indicates damage or degeneration of either central or peripheral neurons. Chronic paresthesias are common to many diseases, including multiple sclerosis, diabetes, and hypothyroidism. The other type is called dysesthesia, which is an unpleasant abnormal sensation sometimes described as painful or like acid under the skin. Another interesting version is occlusional dysesthesia, or the phantom bite, which is a sensation that the teeth are not closing and aligning properly while chewing. Dysesthesias can be found in isolation, or they can be due to diseases like diabetes and alcohol withdrawal. Let's try a quick review on that. Which type of paresthesia is seen in diabetic neuropathy? The answer is chronic paresthesia. Part 3. What are allodynia and hyperalgesia? Now that we have discussed neuropathic pain and paresthesia, let's revisit allodynia and hyperalgesia in greater detail. What are these types of pain again? Remember that allodynia is a symptom of neuropathy in which the patient feels pain when exposed to an innocuous stimulus that normally does not provoke pain. Hyperalgesia is a feeling of extreme pain disproportionate to the peripheral stimulus or injury. Allodynia can be classified into different categories according to the stimulus involved. For instance, mechanical allodynia refers to abnormal pain produced by light touch. In some patients, this can be so severe that they feel pain even when their skin is lightly brushed by a feather. Thermal allodynia refers to experiencing pain with a mild change of temperature. For example, just a few drops of mildly cold water on the skin can cause enough change in temperature to be interpreted as pain. Finally, movement allodynia refers to pain with normal movements of joints and muscles in the absence of musculoskeletal disease or injury. It can be extremely devastating to the patients affected and often limits normal mobility. In the case of allodynia, stimulation of peripheral mechanoreceptors generates a signal transmitted to the dorsal horn. Because of central sensitization, these low-threshold touch signals are interpreted as pain by the highly sensitive second-order pain neurons. These signals are then sent to the brain, causing the patient to feel pain in the absence of a painful stimulus. Let's review allodynia before we move on. What is allodynia? Allodynia occurs when patients feel pain when exposed to a stimuli that normally does not provoke pain. Allodynia is related to and often confused with hyperalgesia. As previously described, hyperalgesia refers to pain disproportionate to the provoking stimulus. For example, a small bump that would cause mild pain in a healthy individual may feel just excruciating in patients with hyperalgesia. In the case of hyperalgesia, central sensitization amplifies peripheral pain signals relayed to the central nervous system, causing it to be interpreted as excruciating pain. And that's all I have today on pain mechanisms. I hope it didn't hurt too much. Ha! Now let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode today. First, can you identify the 5 main types of pain? The main types include nociceptive, breakthrough, inflammatory, neuropathic, and functional pain. Now, can you describe these types of pain and what triggers them? Nociceptive pain is due to stimulation of peripheral pain receptors by noxious or harmful stimuli. Breakthrough pain is an acute flare of chronic nociceptive pain that breaks through a normal regimen of pain medication commonly felt by patients with cancer. Inflammatory pain is due to the release of inflammatory mediators, like interleukins, during tissue injury that stimulate nociceptors. Neuropathic pain is caused by damage to peripheral nerves or central nervous system lesions rather than external stimuli, as is nociceptive pain. Functional pain, such as in IBS and fibromyalgia, is not caused by identifiable injury, but often caused or increased by psychosocial factors such as increased stress and emotional conflicts. With regards to neuropathic pain, can you describe the neurocircuitry or mechanism behind neuropathic pain? The sensation of pain begins when a peripheral neuron detects a painful stimulus, like a cut or a burn. After detection, this neuron transmits this signal in the form of an action potential to the central nervous system via a synapse in the dorsal horn. From the dorsal horn, a second-order neuron takes the signal to the brain, where it is processed and interpreted. Next, can you define and describe paresthesia? Paresthesia refers to a burning, tingling, or numb sensation, you know, pins and needles, felt usually in hands, arms, and feet that may be due to underlying illnesses like diabetes or neurologic disease. Finally, can you explain allodynia and hyperalgesia and how these two differ? Allodynia describes pain elicited by normally non-painful stimuli. Hyperalgesia refers to a condition in which a normally mildly painful stimulus results in an exaggerated and disproportionate pain response. Now, armed with your newfound knowledge on the different kinds of pain and their mechanisms, let's revisit our patient from the beginning of today's episode. Remember that you are seeing a 62-year-old woman with metastatic breast cancer who is receiving hospice care. She tells you that she is experiencing increased bone pain that is no longer adequately managed by her medications. Her situation makes you ponder why pain thresholds change over time. How would you evaluate her pain? What is the mechanism of her pain? And how will you manage her treatment? Having learned about the different types of pain, you begin by asking your patient to describe her pain. She says that her lower back feels like it is throbbing with sharp and aching pain that is not dulled by taking her medication. You deduce that your patient is experiencing nociceptive pain. Her cancer invading the bone is stimulating pain receptors that carry the message to the brain that she perceives as pain. She's now also experiencing breakthrough pain, possibly secondary to tolerance and increased bony metastases as her disease progresses. As you review your patient's notes, you see that she has previously set her goals of care as symptom palliation. Thus, you discuss with her additional pain medications, including dosage and frequency. "Let's try your suggestions," she responds. "I may not like the side effects, but if it controls the pain better, it's a good trade-off." Having a solid understanding of the different kinds of pain and their mechanisms have allowed you to help your patients manage their pain. And you begin to appreciate that not all pain are the same. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBrix experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying, and see you next time.